Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 25, delivered on April 27, 2016. The title of this lecture is Review for the Final Exam.
Today, review for the final exam. It will be 7 questions. You answer 5 of them. No, don't answer all 7, and then tell me to grade the best of the 7. The exam does not explore anything that was not at least one of the questions you possibly could have had when I went through this same routine for exams 1 and 2. I'm not going to blindside you. As I think I said, the course objectives, which are in the syllabus, are the key on this final exam. I have these expectations. You've hit these objectives, and I can say, all right, this person is qualified to get an incredibly great grade in this class, or at least one that is acceptable. I'm not trying to probe new logic or new areas in finance on this exam. It's really core basic stuff. Now, of those 7 questions, 3 will be from exam 1 and or exam 2. They will be the same question because there were questions on those that were the objective. And I want to see that you have this solidly in your mind as you leave this course. So in other words, there's where you start. Know what the right answers are on those questions, those problems on exam 1 and exam 2. That's a major thing. You can polish off 3 of the questions right there. Now I'm going to go through what I think you should know. Maybe about 20 areas, 20 questions. And then I anticipate that you can ask me questions. Is this going to be on the exam? If it's not, I'm going to say, no, I'm not going to ask you that. Are you crazy? I don't want to try to grade that again or something like that. There will be that balance you've seen on my other exams where some of the questions will be definition. You just say what I said, which is a lot of times what you have to do in business. I understand we'd like to be creative, but unfortunately as business people we can't be creative. Just repeat what I told you as an answer. Okay? Others you'll have to dig in a little deeper and think about what the right answer would be. Try to stay frosty, stay on point, and focused. Okay? So all of that having been said, here we go. I very well could ask you to distinguish between accounting and finance, specifically in terms of costs and the impact on the profit. In other words, revenue minus cost is profit. So if we differ in terms of what we consider to be cost, that certainly is going to impact on what profit means and what is profit to us at the bottom line. So I will certainly, in some way or other, I'll guarantee you, that in some way I'm going to probe this question of difference in accounting. Cost. What does accounting consider a cost that we don't think is really something that you should look at? Or what do we consider a cost that accounting doesn't even consider? Okay, that's going to be something that I will probe. Because unfortunately our world is dominated by the accounting. That's, you know, all of my taxes, my reports to investors, all of that is based upon accounting, and yet that's not the basis of sound financial analysis. So you got to know that. know those costs. I brought up a whole bunch of them. Real quick, all right, let me try one on you. Well, you're trying to avoid me now. What would be a cost that is important in finance that we don't see in accounting? No, this is kind of like blindsiding. I haven't even studied yet. Okay, that's okay. That's why we're doing the review. Anyone know a cost? Yeah, go ahead. Bingo, opportunity cost. That's so important to us. And yet, that's not even anywhere in the accounting. And that's what drives business decision making. So much of our business decision making is the opportunity cost, not a cost that you see in the financial statements anywhere. But there are other costs too. Remember, there are costs that accountants use that we don't think are good. There are costs that we use that accountants would not be able to. And this isn't something against accounting. It is their rules. They have to do it this way. Because they don't want to get into this fuzzy world that we are in finance are, where we have doubts and we're wrong as maybe more than we're right. There you go. I want you to, another area, you remember that we spent several chapters on bonds. And it will be important for you to know the price drivers of bonds. In other words, know the term and its relationship to the price. I asked this on exam one. What is the relationship between the term of a bond and the price of a bond? And in that same regard, I could double up a question that would be easy if you have it dead on, and it would be a killer if you don't know it. What is the relationship between the price of a bond and the spread between coupon and yield on that bond? What is the relationship between the price of a bond and the spread between the coupon and the yield? Now, remember in this regard that the price is one way if the coupon is above the yield. The price is the other way if the yield is above the coupon. I think I said that right. You'd have to tell it to me both ways, okay? Again, let me repeat that so that you understand it fully and you've got it down. The price of a bond is one thing, one way, if the coupon is more than the yield. The price of the bond is the other way if the yield is above the coupon. That was one of those, it takes a while for that to sink in, and I'm actually not surprised on the first exam when you don't get it right or you get it fuzzy. Here's where you have to nail it precisely. Truth be told, on this final exam, 30 minutes should do it, and then read it over to make sure that you haven't misspelled anything or said something that you think in retrospect isn't right. So another 15 to 20 minutes. If you're dragging on more than an hour and especially if you're in here an hour and 30 minutes, the whole 2 hours, you're reaching and you're trying to find things in your mind that might not be particularly there. Now, of course, you do have the your note card for the final. One, okay? So write tiny. Risk. First of all, with risk, what is the difference between diversifiable and non-diversifiable risk? You'd have to tell me which one matters to us. Which one matters to us? And I want to say in finance, but it's more than that. Which one matters to us in our actual lives? As most of you will have at least some control over your investment portfolio. You'll build your own, or you'll get to make choices in your 401k or whatever. So make sure that you know this risk concept and what it means. Are any of you here in the Illinois State Students in Finance? Okay, here's what happened. They had a contest. And I just walked away. I don't want to even see this happening. They had a contest, a simulation, one of those things where you have play money of $100,000 in a period of some weeks, who gets the highest return. Well, there it was. They announced the winner, gave the winner money and all that kind of stuff. And now you know me, I'm a very calm person. I never say anything harsh or mean or, okay, people, knock it off. But I just grumbled, okay, you got someone here in, 6 weeks or something like that? Went from $100,000 to $136,000. What was the beta and what was the actual volatility? In other words, how much risk did this person take and how much of that risk was necessary to take? Well, I don't know. So I just walk away grumbling and didn't have me as your professor. Because, I mean, that's just not what you do. We're responsible for ourselves, and if we actually invest for other people, you know. Anyway, I'll stop griping about that right now. And that goes to the next something I could ask. This would be it sounds like a soft question, but it's actually a hard question. Name three factors important in making a quote-unquote good portfolio. Name three factors that would be important in making a quote-unquote good portfolio. And there are like about five factors that you could put, or you could word things differently, but I would want you to show me that you understand some of the things that I brought up, words like systematic risk, correlation, size of the portfolio, balance of the portfolio, those kinds of things, appropriateness of the risk to you, those kinds of factors are, now that you can't just say what I just said there, you've got to lay it out in a good complete sentence, one or two sentences, but this is huge to you in your lives, okay? A mother's work is never done. Interest rates. There are two different possible areas of questions. One would be for me to ask you, what are the components of an interest rate? In other words, you know that an interest rate has in it the risk-free rate, but it also has the risk premium. I would want you to explain each piece of the risk premium and what we mean by the risk-free rate, which is the real rate of return plus the expected inflation premium. Get in here. Hurry up. Anyway, you got the idea there. It's just name the pieces. Just name the pieces. Another approach that I could take in that same regard, not in that same regard, but for you to explain to me why changes in interest rates are important to businesses. Why interest rate changes are important to businesses. And I would give you just the broad hint. Think about the net present value of projects. What happens when interest rates go up? What happens to NPVs and the probability of accepting versus rejecting? Think about yourself as a project, as an employee. If interest rates go up, what's the company going to do with projects? Is it going to take more of them? Is it going to take fewer of them? And what does that mean about you as a project for the company? In other words, I'm trying to take this out of the realm of theory and get it into the dynamics of your actual lives, whether you're going to be in finance or not. And I brought this up before. I could ask you what beta is. I mean, that's just a dead flat-on definition. No doubt about it. I mean, that's almost one that's so obvious that I'd almost avoid asking it, but it's also one that is rather important to us. Although, interestingly enough, just in my own experience, the concept of beta is not familiar in the business world outside of finance itself. The term beta, even though it's important for project decision making, you don't hear it in marketing, human resources, operations management. I mean, so in a way, it's a hugely important thing, but at the same time, it's kind of restricted in what discipline knows it or actually cares about it too much. Know the difference? I want you to give me the difference between internally generated and externally generated equity as sources of funds. How can a company, if it wants to use equity, how could it fund the project? This was a subject in the first exam. I think it was the first exam. If a company wants to use equity, how could it finance it? Go. If they want to use equity, there are two different flavors of it. There's the internal and the external. And what are the pros and cons? What is the difference? Not pros and cons. Okay, now, in a somewhat related matter, and you'll have to dig back to earlier in the semester, and I talked about this, I brought it up a couple of times. Why should you be suspicious of a company that's raising money through equity? Why should you suspect or have suspicions or be concerned when a company raises money through the sale of common stock? Just get it down to that simple thing. There are a couple of reasons. I might ask you to explain to me those couple of reasons. They have to do with cost of equity, but they also have to do with ownership. They have to do with where the price is. What is the company signaling if it's trying to sell stock? What is the company signaling when it's going for something that's expensive versus something else that would be usually would be cheaper? What does it say about anyone who wants to share his or her success in business with you guys? Remember when I talked about that kind of stuff, what that meant? I don't want you to be, well, yeah, I do want you to be as cynical as I am. But at the same time, there's reasons why you should not just, oh, wow, common stock, I'll buy some of that offering. Okay, now, there are a couple of different angles I could take. I spent time talking about the Federal Reserve. What are the three duties of the Federal Reserve? Remember that one? And as an alternative, one of those duties, I'll tell you right now, is conducting monetary policy. What are the three tools of monetary policy? Watch out for that, because I've asked that question in the past on a final exam, and I asked one of those two questions, and they answered the other of them. I said, what are the three duties? And they answered me the three tools of monetary policy. Or I asked, what are the three tools of monetary policy? And they answered me the three duties. And that's just a game stopper right there. Don't do that. Watch that one. There's two different things going on here. Now, in that same regard, what is liquidity? That's an easy one. What is liquidity? Now, I could ask it a little bit more deeply. What is liquidity, and what is the upside and the downside of high liquidity? What is liquidity, and what is the upside of high liquidity, and what is the downside of high liquidity? And I'll hint out this one just a little bit for you, because this one is kind of in your dark past. Well, actually, Maybe I should ask someone who might want to give me a stab. Anyone want to try to take a stab at the answer here? Nope, no volunteers. Okay, let's try it this way, simple thing. Okay, all of my money that I have in the world is in my pocket, okay? 10 bucks, 11 bucks, Denny's, okay? The problem with this is that, so the upside is, I've got my money right here, I can use it as soon as I need it, just right away. The downside of that is that when you've highly liquid, generally is going to be, go ahead. That's exactly right. I mean, I can either have my cake or I can eat it. I don't know how that works with this one, but you see what I mean? The thing is that high liquidity is great because you can get your hands on your money right away. But at the same time, that high liquidity can get you in a world of trouble because you're just not, it's not actually working for you. If you had that in a bank account, a long-term CD, it could make a little bit for you. If you had it in some asset, like a machine in your factory, it could make a lot more for you. But again, though, you do it that go that other way, then you don't have it in your pocket. I'll tell you a real life story happened just last week. I was talking with an executive of in treasury at a company, and he was telling he said I told my assistant that I wanted to cut a check for something like $400,000. And get it out right away because we owed a bill. And my assistant came back to me and said, that checking account doesn't have $400,000 in it. We don't have, no, the way she said it, I was told that they wouldn't cut the check because we don't have $400,000. Well, she just kind of had, or he just had like a cow. What? We got like $18 million. And so she went back down there, his assistant did, and found out that, yeah, they do have $18 million, but they, at any given time, they're probably going to have that in longer-term instruments making a little bit of money. And so it sounded to her at first like the company was on the verge of not having of illiquidity, but it was just that, well, we can't just let money just sit there waiting to write checks. If we sweep it out and put it to work, at least making a little bit of money for us along the way. The problem, of course, was, though, that if they hadn't caught that, $400,000 check would have gone out and boing, boing, boing. Anyway, I thought that was hilarious when I said that to him, and he didn't think it was funny at all. I might do one of those, like the yield curve question. Remember the yield curve question? What's this yield curve telling you? I've kind of been keeping just as a side note, I've been keeping kind of a watchful eye on the yield curve. It's behaving, I mean, it's behaving like we're going to have some kind of real turbulence down the line. There's just these hints in it, you know, that inversion, or at first it'll be arching upward like this, then there will be this almost like an inversion, it's threatening to invert, and then it'll bounce back up. It's almost like they're saying that it's an election season or something. I don't know. It does get a little bit fuzzy, especially when the Fed, which has been threatening to start raising interest rates to slow down the growth of the economy, especially the growth of the money supply. And then the Fed keeps threatening to, and then the Fed backs off. That's a prescription for disaster like it was in the 1970s. The Fed kept threatening to clamp down on the money supply. It didn't. And so you got that expected inflation premium building in. Okay, now, I could ask you a question. Give an example of how the capital asset pricing model could be used by a finance professional. Give an example of how the capital asset pricing model could be used by a finance professional. or something without worrying. Go ahead.
One more time.
Give an example of how the capital asset pricing model could be used by a finance professional. Now remember that the CAPM, it's solving for an interest rate. And interest rates, discount rates, required rate of return, whatever you want to say, what are we using? What do we use those for? You guys have been using these half the quarter. You're probably going to be glad to have that over with. What is it we were using those for? So what would the CAPM be used for in real life by a finance professional? There are a couple of different angles. And it all boils down to, why would we ever need a discount rate? What could that possibly be used for in real life? Okay, another quickie that I'm kind of being a little random here, but here's another one that I might ask just as one of those to make sure that you get some points on the final. What is flight to quality? What is flight to quality? You have to give me a straight up definition. Remember, the anecdotal way of saying it, don't say it this way. This is not the answer. But the anecdote, remember what, well, no, do you remember the anecdote about what flight to quality means? Say it. Flight to quality. Stock to bonds.
Bonds to metal.
Bonds to gold.
Okay, metal to bullets.
Okay. Technically, bullets have some metal in them, but it's, you know, that. You remember flight to quality? Yeah, it's one of those. It's one of those you really don't ever want to take past the bonds, okay? And it can get really serious, too. When you lose confidence, when the business community falls apart and the bonds start defaulting, people start gathering up the gold as they can. And unfortunately, currencies that aren't, and I don't want you to think I'm talking about you should hoard gold, but the currencies that are not real gold, silver, they become totally worthless. The stocks become worthless, then the bonds become worthless, and then the money becomes worthless. The famous stories were in Germany after its defeat in World War I. You would see along the side of the road just these piles of the local coin currency. Just because the people had been walking it in wheelbarrows, and it just was so heavy and it was so worthless. The wheelbarrow was real metal, so they just dumped the money out because it didn't have any value. And then, of course, came the next step. What came after the gold was no longer reliable? Well, that would have been Herr Hitler. So let's stop at the bonds, whatever we can, and not let it go any further than that. I could ask you another throwaway, and I'm giving you some of the ones that would be easies that you could hit pretty darn quickly. What is money? And what are the three kinds of money? And again, that doesn't mean M1, M2, M3. When I'm asking what is money and what are the three kinds, remember that I'm talking about those different kinds of money in terms of their intrinsic value. Interestingly, this idea that money, coins, and currency have always been around is actually kind of a myth, to the extent that most people historically didn't actually have metal money or fiat money. They lived in a bartering kind of world, and it worked quite well for them. As a matter of fact, historically, as far as I can tell, and I know, the first labor strike that is documented historically was in Egypt during the time of the pharaohs. The scribes and the religious elite lived in this one village where they did their work on the pyramid that took 20, 30, 40 years to build. And they decided that Pharaoh wasn't giving them enough of the things that they wanted. They didn't want pay. What they were paid in was food, booze, and companionship. And it was like Pharaoh said no, and so the scribes and the shamans and all that said, we're not going to work. And so the Pharaoh at first, I guess, said, well, chop off the heads of 10% of them. Yeah. And then his advisor said, no, because they're writing all the guidelines for you when you die, where you're going to go, and if you start making them mad, they could send you to places you really don't want to go, like the toilets on the side of town. So the Pharaoh buckled, he blinked, and he granted their wages. But it wasn't money, it was barter stuff. So even the greatest of people in history oftentimes didn't use money for the kind of money we think of, the coins. They used barter. That was a boring thing, wasn't it? Optimal capital structure. The heck with you guys. Optimal capital structure. What is it? And why can different companies have different optimal capital structures? And another one from exam two, that's always a good one because the answer is so short and to the point. What is the relationship between net present value and internal rate of return? I've given you a lot to study, but I do give you a guarantee that it will not be outside of what I've done, what I've said here. And don't forget to make sure that you know the one in exam one and exam two. Now it's you will be doing your student evaluation, so I have to leave as soon as I finish this. But it's your turn. Do you want to ask me anything? You can be very pointed with your questions. Do you have anything that's on your mind? Yeah.
Is there any big question about
the No. I nearly got my tires slashed asking you about that for the last exam. Again, nothing about the capital market line. That was a little bit rough. Yes.
Will there be a question on why debt is cheaper than equity until when?
No, I'm not going to ask it this time. Okay. No. Let me point it this way. I'm going to ask you, and I'm glad you brought this up. Write this down. This was one. I was sitting here blabbing, trying to hope I remembered it. You saved my bacon on that. Okay, who has prior claim and who has residual claim on cash flows? And what does that mean about the cost of debt and equity relative to each other? Who has a prior claim and who has a residual claim? And what does this, what is the implication of this, or what does this mean about the relative cost of debt and equity? Yes. I could ask you to explain the difference between volatility and systematic risk. I asked that. Remember, that was sort of one of the questions on the exam. And certainly that's fair game. Just when you hear, well, high price volatility, that doesn't really mean a whole lot to us. In your normal everyday life, sir, you are a mild-mannered, sweet, loving man. But there's one night every month when you close the iron gates on your home and you turn into a werewolf. You're bouncing all over the room. But you see, the point, though, is that no one cares about that. Because you're in your little room. Your volatility is all over the place. The only part we care about is that part when you open up the gates and the sun is shining and it's not a full moon. I have no idea what that means. Yeah, but there's a logic to that. You get the idea there that we don't care about the bizarre stuff. And honestly, in the... Oh, well, I won't get into that, though. Yeah, go ahead.
Are you going to ask about financial intermediation?
No, I will not ask it.
Financial
intermediation. Won't ask it. Go.
Are you going to ask about registered and unregistered securities?
No. Wait, what? I am so lost right now. Okay. Yes.
Will there be anything on matching surplus economic
No. She asked, first one was financial intermediation. I won't ask it. And then it's sort of almost matching surplus and deficit economic units, which is part of that, I will not ask. Yeah. I'm trying to, those are good questions because those are actually things that I did ask, and now I'm telling you, don't worry about those. There's only so much I can ask you. Go.
Are you going to ask what beta?
I could be Wabbit. That's a kind of a biggie. I mean, like I said, though, that's so easy that it's almost like, you know, it's almost a gimme. He's going to ask that, and then I don't, but then I think they'll think I'm going to ask it, and then they'll realize that I'm not going to ask it, so then I do ask it. Never mind. Go ahead.
Are you going to ask about matching surplus economic?
No. That's the same financial intermediation. I'm not going to ask it. Yes.
Are you drafting more assignments on
financial? Say that. No, at this point, now that everything is finished up, except for the final exam, what I can do is bring in all of your test, homework, quiz, and test scores from the whole semester and then kick out the lowest three from the entire semester. I did it for what was there at the break. Now I bring everything back in and throw out the lowest three, but I have not done that yet. I'll probably do that like on Thursday night. And then you'll see your true score coming through. Your pure score. It should be a little bump. Sometimes it's kind of weird that way and it's a little lower, but that should give you a bump on your final grade. Yeah. Yes, I would. In a question I asked about interest rates, explain what each of the components of the risk premium is. And of course, there are the three. Remember, the default, maturity, and illiquidity premiums. Yeah. I'd love to, but I can't. I mean, honestly, I've asked that in the past, and that is such a deep subject. Even the thing about registered versus unregistered securities, that's pushing the boundary. But what does it mean to go public? Wow. I mean, you could write a couple of hundred volumes on it. I'm not going to ask it. I won't. Anything else? Yeah. Just explain each of the components of the risk premium. The default premium is the reward for the risk that part or all of the cash flow will not be satisfied, comma. The maturity premium is the component for the potential volatility of interest rates in the future, and the illiquidity premium is. It would just lay it out as a single swath with commas or semicolons between each of the independent clauses. Don't drift off the path, okay, for God's sake, because you could get into some real serious trouble if you start trying to explain too much or you don't give me too little of an explanation. That would be actually kind of a little tougher, just laying out the answer. You might know it, but you might not give it to me well enough, so be careful on that one if I do that. What else? Okay, I'm going to need a couple of volunteers to, I have to leave so that you can do the, it is Tuesday from 10 to noon. Is that right? Yeah, okay. I've got the two. I got two big sections, and I'm so confused about it. At least we don't have them like 7 o'clock in the morning like we used to. That was, people were really not very up to it at that hour. Okay. I thank you for being my students, and I hope to see all of you in my office. Well, not all of you at the same time, but over the next couple of months. Also, before I go, I'm going to put up on the scrolling marquee. I can't tell right now when I'm going to be able to do it because I've got some doctor's appointments I've got to do. But Monday, I will have two sets of office hours. My regular office hours from 2 to 3:30. But I'll also try to hit here in the morning. I'm going to be in my office from about 12:30, okay? So that you, if you want to come in and ask some questions or anything like that, you'll have two chances to on Monday. And I'll put it up, the definitive, in the scrolling marquee on my podcasting site. Other than that, Elvis has left the building. That's all I have for you. I thank you.